Welcome aboard. I'm David James, and this is a special edition of Two Main Street from the main deck of LST 325. The World War II ship has been lovingly restored and is the only fully operational LST on U.S. waters. The ship makes annual river cruises, and we just left Aurora, Indiana, which hosted the ship and crew. Aurora, by the way, about a day and a half trip upriver from LST 325's home port on the Evansville Riverfront. A lot of exciting news about the old warship, which is moving to a new home next to the Tropicana Casino. LST 325, of course, a survivor of combat during World War II, taking part in Operation Husky in the invasion of Italy, Operation Avalanche in the invasion of Salerno, and Operation, of course, Overlord, the invasion of Normandy. LST 325 also survived the scrap heap. So many of the ships were dismantled, others sunk in target practice. Evansville, of course, closely tied to the LST because 167 of them slid down the ramp at the Evansville shipyard, which at one time had as many as 19,000 workers. LST 325 was actually built in Philadelphia and commissioned in 1942. Well, I have been granted permission to come aboard, and my host is Chris Donahue. So, Chris, it was always it's always exciting to see visitors on board LST 325 and the reactions.
Oh, yeah, it is. Well, there's hundreds of reactions. I mean, we probably did, 8,000 people, something like that, in those 4 days, 5 days. So I can't even start to talk about reactions. Everything from school kids to a 106-year-old person, come on. But that's why we do what we do. We're show-offs, and that's what we get out of it.
And every time you stop, they tell somebody about the LST 325,
right?
And the word is spread around the country.
It is. It's Facebook, and of course we've got our younger folks working our Facebook page, and it's really taken off big time.
And I was excited to talk to all the people on board, the crew, of course, a colorful crew always aboard LST 325.
Yeah, you can call it colorful. Yeah, they're colorful, all right. And some of these guys, this is the second trip this year. Usually we do one trip a year for about 3.5 weeks. That's our main fundraiser that we earn some money in Evansville, yes, but this is one that puts us over in the black. And so these guys have been to Chattanooga, and then Decatur, Alabama. And I jumped, and then they came back here, and some of them stayed on for this trip. I jumped on it because they needed some help. These guys have been stretched, so I'm out here too now, and sailing back from Aurora. But you talk about 5 weeks on this ship. You've been on it a day and a half.
That's
maybe.
That's right.
And you get the feeling, you know, you saw the luxurious sleeping facilities.
Sure.
Sleeping with, you know, about
sleep a relative word. I didn't do much sleeping
right.
Last night, really.
And you won't until you get home. But,
well, listen, we just went under a bridge here. We're south of Louisville, it's looking at the scenery here. Just wooded areas on both sides of the river. A few homes dotted here and there.
If it weren't for the trees on the beach, we wouldn't know if we're moving. You know, if they're moving by us, we know we're LST. You know, the crew in World War II would tell you LST stands for Large Slow Target, our last ship there. Because right now we're probably doing a little over 9 mph.
Mm-hmm.
And in the war, fully loaded with 20 tanks, 30 trucks, you're at 4,000 tons, probably somewhere between 5 and 8 mph on a good day. So we get in no hurry here. We're aiming at 7 a.m. arrival in Evansville. And as we get closer, that's when we determine whether to speed up or slow it down. And like I say, it's like for a lot of us, like watching paint dry. If you can see the green trees going by on the side there. But
well, we're talking to Chris Donahue. He's our host aboard LST 325. We're near the bow of the ship. Nice breeze, and we're in a shady spot here, so we're enjoying ourselves and enjoying the scenery. Now, what are some of the frequently asked questions when people tour the ship, Chris?
Well, on this trip, it was kind of funny because people say, how'd you get this ship here? And you don't laugh because some of them are serious. You know, did you put it on a flatbed or tow it up? And so, well, we drove it here. We piloted it here. And then you get that deer in the headlight look, like, no, we really did. Come back on Monday night about 8 p.m. and you'll see us pull away. And they did. They were out there. A lot of people ask about Normandy, because everybody, if you don't know a lot about World War II, you've heard of D-Day, June 6, 44. Of course, this ship was there. They say, oh, so this was at Normandy. And, of course, there's a couple of holes we can show them from German aircraft. That didn't happen at Normandy, but North Africa. And we talk about that, yes, and how many tanks it could hold. And then we go back, but before Normandy, it was in North Africa, then Sicily, then Salerno, and then Normandy, where we lost, you know, the Allies lost somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 soldiers, dead and wounded in one day. And then we talk about the fact there's five beaches there, the bloodiest one. A lot of people have heard of Omaha Beach. That's where this ship was. And we could spend 2 hours on talking about the losses and how it happened at Normandy, and that's where this ship was. But so we're blessed to have the last one standing that has that kind of history behind it. Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of these crew members are historians in their own right. They have a lot of history, a lot of experience being on this ship.
Oh, yes. Two of the guys on here are 93, 93 and a half. Well, the one guy turned 93 and a half on the ship. They baked him a cake. And he says, well, when you hit 90, halves count. So we got two of them on here that I know of, and a whole bunch of guys, Vietnam era. A lot of these guys, they were on LSTs in Vietnam. And you can get a lot of stories on here.
Of course, Evansville, I'm very fortunate to have LST 325. Of course, Evansville has a rich history involving the ship with the Evansville shipyard. And they really cranked those ships out.
Oh, yeah. They're, like I said, they produce more than any other one shipyard in the country. The next number two was we had 167. Seneca, Illinois had 157. They probably got, maybe 3,000 people up there. So that's kind of mind-boggling, too. Mm-hmm. But, Evansville, as everybody knows, of course, we made 96% of the .45 caliber ammunition. And I'm kind of going off on tangents here, but it's all intertwined. The most LSTs, the most ammo, .45 caliber, and a whole bunch of .30 caliber. So it's mind-boggling what Evansville did during the war.
I think it's what I really got from my time on the ship where we're cruising. I mean, it just makes it special. I mean, you can see it have a static museum where you can go visit and everything. This is a floating museum.
Right.
And a working ship.
You can go to Muskegon, Michigan and see the LST 393. It was a car ferry. It's got openings on each side where cars come and go. And that's a great, it was at Normandy alongside this one, but it's not quite the same. So right now we have bragging rights, only one in the world. The other guys, they got museums and they're cool. So our goal is to keep this a sailing museum and showing it off around, the eastern U.S. inland rivers as long as we can.
And it takes a lot to keep it operational, I imagine.
Yes, it does. There's been a lot of hard work on here. And I've only been on here like 8 days, and a lot of sweat and hard work goes into this. And you'll be talking to the chief engineer. We got two choo-choo train engines in here. I tell the kids on tour, they're locomotive engines. Not what you would normally put in a ship unless you're in the middle of a world war and you got... you're making these ships in 4 months, 3 months to 4 months, and so you call out who has some engines. General Motors says, well, we got all these locomotive engines, V12s. That's what went into these ships. So they're underpowered for the load, but you had to use what was available, and that's why they call the LST the large, slow target.
And the hum of those locomotive engines is music to the ears of Chief Engineer John Hatton.
So there's a lot of museum ships, but they don't run. And I think what fascinates people and what fascinates my volunteers is the fact that this, when we start these engines, it changes. It becomes alive and people just light up. And then we sail away. That's the magic.
Tell us about your crew.
My crew is actually the finest group of people, seriously, I've ever worked with. And they are wonderful guys. They are experts at what they do. There's no job that we've ever taken on that we couldn't do. We bought a generator once. We asked the company what they charged to install it. Big generator. It's down there. The company laughed and said, you get it in there, we'll hook it up. Five of us came down and did it in a weekend. and the people that came by couldn't believe it. Now, we planned for months, and I had one guy was a millwright, and he had everything calculated, and another guy was a welder. I mean, we calculated, we got blueprints, and I mean, so when we did it, it was just like piece of cake. Piece of cake. It had 3 or 4 months of work that went into it before time. So, and it was fun. People just enjoyed it. And these are guys that are retired, you know, they're too old to work anymore. And they shame the young guys.
Of course.
Now, and I think they get a kick out of that, too.
Yeah, now, this is a Navy ship.
Yep.
And you're an Army guy.
I am an Army guy. I got drafted. I came on the ship right after I retired. And I asked questions. I asked technical questions. And it stumped them. And they're like, how would you know to even ask that? I said, I spent 30 years teaching people to fix all this stuff. And they said, come with us. And they kind of drafted me, and that's where I got started.
So tell us about your background.
My background was a farm boy. I grew up in the country and always had an interest in machines. And I started when I was a kid, and then I got working on cars. And it was funny, my father said, boy, if you keep messing with cars, you'll never amount to anything. But when I was one of the top technical guys at GM, he figured out that there was a little bit more to it than that. But I was a technical instructor program developer. So for vehicles, new vehicles, we would develop all the training materials, work with the engineers that designed them, and then develop coursework, and then we'd work with the field people, service engineers, dealership technicians, and so forth. So, and you had to be an expert in everything. And so that was my background. And it was always working with new things. So you research and learn about it, and then you had to figure out how to teach that to someone. And my crew, it's one of the things they really like, because whenever we do something, I'm always explaining to them the steps and why we're doing it, and they love it, because they go, nobody's ever done that before. And it's like, I wrote procedure manuals, which the Coast Guard loves, because it tells the guys everything they need to know, what they do, what stuff means, what to do if something's wrong, and how to troubleshoot it, and so forth, and how to do this and that. So they give you a lot of respect for that, and I just like doing it. And they say, every time we come, we learn something new. It makes it a lot more enjoyable for everybody.
Yeah. Now, take us back, like to maybe World War II, what the engine room would have been like. What would the life like for those sailors working in the engine room?
I've had the opportunity to work with those people and talk with them, so we have a pretty good idea. And first of all, you saw the steps going in. They didn't have that luxury. They had to climb down one of those ladders. The compartments were all separated because of damage if you got hit or something. It was noisy. They didn't issue hearing protectors back then. It was terribly hot. Now, some of the guys who were in the Pacific who I've talked to said the guys would be down in their underwear. It was so hot and just burning up. Noisy, they were isolated, they didn't know what was going on. We have a camera now. They didn't have that. They were just down there. So it was pretty miserable working conditions. But again, it was that time, and that's what they were used to. But it was a very tough job.
Well, and it's obviously a very important job, too.
It is an important job.
You're gonna be dead in the water.
Those guys also, they were very dedicated. And the stories they tell about things that went wrong and didn't happen to fix it because you're out in the ocean. And they talk about the old chief, and the old chief's probably 24, 25, and they were 19 years old. And they had a great deal of respect for their chiefs, just like the guys do now. And, of course, the chiefs depended on their crew. So we have some similarities. I mean, when you work there today, you can kind of relate well to what they went through. It was a tough life, but they enjoyed it.
And if you know your history, like board member Chris Donahue, the LSTs, or landing ship tanks, played a key role in the Allies' victory in World War II.
But there's no other ship in the world. It was a game changer. Churchill said if he had to pick one thing that won that war, it was the LST, because he couldn't do Normandy and you couldn't do any of this island hopping in the Pacific. And you go back to Sicily and Salerno, it's the beginning of the amphibious navy. And as we cruise along here, you know, we talked about it last night when it was dark, cruising along here, you just, if you know some history, you think about the guys who were going to some pretty bad places sailing on this ship at a slow pace. They were in no hurry. But so if you know some history, it means a lot more when you're here sleeping in the same racks they did, using the same showers, eating out of the same galley which you have. It brings history home.
I know, just walking these decks at night, and it's still, and we were under a full moon last night, and you just kind of take yourself back in time to where the ship has been over the years, and
yeah.
and the thoughts of the sailors and the soldiers on board.
Right, and really that's what it's about. It's about the people who, the military in general, the guys and the gals later who man this stuff. This is a big piece of steel, but it's representative of all those people who, to this day, are sacrificing as we speak. That's the way I see it anyway. And so this is just a representative symbol of that.
Now, coming up, this is 2 Main Street. I'm talking to Chris Donahue. We're cruising downriver aboard LST 325 on route to the home port in Evansville, Indiana. Successful cruise.
Everybody's pumped up because they know home's around a few more bends. We got 2 locks to go through. Now, you've seen us go through 2 locks already. There's 4 locks between there.
We went to Barkland and Louisville.
Yeah, and so you got some up. You've seen what most people have never seen in their life from the inside of a lock. And so that's cool. Yeah.
Now, coming up, we're going to be talking to John Talent. He's the kind of the deck officer, I guess.
Right.
And the head of the LST 325 Memorial Committee.
He's president of the board. I'm on the board. He's a workaholic type. That's why I try to come out places like this and hide from him. it means less work. But John was on a he was on a LST in Vietnam. Like a lot of these guys, they know some stuff. The rest of us poor guys are just learning on the job. But so we're fortunate to have him. He runs the memorial along with the board, and then he comes out here. Well, we're going on 5 weeks. Now, I think he's still married. His wife, they live in Florida, and I'll say 900 miles away.
Yeah.
But bless her heart, Karen. So a lot of sacrifice out here with these guys.
Well, he is certainly committed to this ship, and we're going to hear from him coming up next. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport.
Support for 2 Main Street with David James comes from listeners like you and from Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management, guiding clients through all stages of their financial lives to help them achieve long-term peace of mind. Details at BergerWealthServices.com.
I'm David James, and welcome back to 2 Main Street and our cruise aboard LST 325. We'll return to our conversation with board member Chris Donahue, but first, I managed to corral a very busy John Talent for an interview. John is the ever-watchful deck officer and also president of USS LST Ship Memorial, Inc. He's a Vietnam veteran with a close bond to the ship and its crew.
Well, it's a piece of my history as well as a great experience. I served in the Navy in 68-69 in the Mekong River Delta of Vietnam. Today, when they dial up those main engines and I feel that vibration under my feet, about 50 years falls off of me because we're on brown water, green river banks, and for a change, everybody's waving instead of shooting. I like that part a lot. Not only that, I recently retired. I worked until I was 70. I enjoyed what I was doing. I was being well paid to do it. But it took me about 2 years to get my head wrapped around the idea of not getting up and going somewhere to work every morning of the world. And I got involved with the ship before I retired and started really looking forward to retirement because I can spend as much time as I want on this ship. And as president now, I do.
Well, John, tell us about the crew members here. These guys look like they're having a good time.
This is a great group of people. This is not a pleasure cruise. These guys all work. And we are blessed with an enormous depth of skill sets on this ship that allow us to keep a 76-year-old piece of machinery in operation. It takes electricians, welders, plumbers, pipe fitters, engine men, diesel mechanics, deckhands, everybody on this ship performs a valuable function that enables us to collectively make this ship operate. So it's not just a matter of skill sets, it's a matter of culture. And these guys all fit together. You either fit or you don't fit. It doesn't matter how smart you are, it doesn't matter how skilled you are. If you don't fit in this culture, you won't survive.
And I know it's a great satisfaction for these crew members to meet fellow veterans who come to tour the ship.
Yeah, and it's not just veterans. If you watch the news, and of course you guys are the news, but if you watch the news, you'd think the world's going to hell in a handbasket. I get out here for anywhere from 3 to 5 weeks a year, and we have anywhere from 3 to 4,500 people a day coming through this ship in a port venue. And it literally restores my faith in America, because these are good, honest, decent, hardworking, taxpaying Americans that aren't selling drugs, they aren't raping, pillaging, and plundering, they're not burning things down, they're not politicians. But seriously, it does. You find out what America really is. Because these people don't make the news, but by God, they pay the bills.
Now tell us about LST's importance to the city of Evansville.
Well, from a historical perspective, when they designed these ships at the very beginning of World War II, there was a recognition stemming primarily from Churchill's terrible experience at Gallipoli in World War I, where they found out it wasn't enough just to put troops ashore. You had to put heavy artillery, tanks, materiel in quantity ashore to support an invasion. He recognized early on that we were going to have something that resembled this ship in order to fulfill that function in World War II. And that was the genesis of the design, and then it was taken over by the U.S. Navy Bureau of Construction. And they designed literally on, it wasn't the back of an envelope, but it was a sketch on a piece of paper, what you're sitting on right now. The overall concept changed very little. And they started producing these ships, and they needed vast quantities because we were in a two-ocean war. Every invasion that we did during World War II started out as an amphibious invasion. We had to come in from the sea. All the deep water ports were occupied and very well defended. They didn't send out the welcome wagon when we showed up. We had to cross a hostile beach. So these ships were essential to that effort. So essential that early in the program, they literally took the laid down hull of an aircraft carrier, the keel of an aircraft carrier, out of a dry dock at Newport News and built one of these. That's how essential they were. And there was this tremendous act of balancing the resources that were available with the needs that they had. At one point, they slowed this program down so they could build more destroyer escorts for duty in the North Atlantic, because if they couldn't get materiel across the ocean, it didn't matter how many ships they had to land it, they weren't going anywhere. In World War II, in 1939, I believe, my numbers may be a little bit off, we went from something like a 640-ship U.S. Navy to the end of 44, something over 6,000 ships. And we were coming out of a depression. Our industrial infrastructure was at a nadir at that time. So they had to really ramp up. And when you consider what this nation did on the home front in World War II, it just boggles your mind. And I'm old, and it's hard to boggle my mind. But in this program, somewhere in the process, some genius looked up from his desk one day and said, you know, These are shallow draft ships. We don't have to occupy space in deep water shipyards. We can build them on the inland rivers. Ta-da! And they started up at Drevaux and at Neville Island in Pittsburgh, which already had a construction yard for barges and towboats. Jeffersonville, that we just passed, was the same thing. That was the old Howard Steamboat Yards. And then they started building yards to build these ships. And one of those yards was built at Evansville, Indiana. And they produced more LSTs there than any other shipyard in the nation. 171 of them came out of the Evansville yard. That was a huge piece of the war effort, and it was a huge piece of Evansville's economy and their culture and their history.
So the LST is a perfect fit for Evansville.
LST is exactly the fit for Evansville.
On this cruise from Aurora, Indiana to the home port of Evansville, LST 325 docked through four dams, Markland, Louisville, Canelton, and Newburgh. In the wheelhouse steering the vessel is Captain Bob Kubota. So how did Bob get this job?
Well, this is a kind of a funny story, but when the ship was in at Marietta, that's been several years ago. Of course, I took a tour of it, but I didn't talk to all these guys too much. But a good friend of mine, Don Brilliant, he talked to them, and we were both paramedics. Anyway, he found out they didn't have an EMT to go back to Evansville. So he was on his break, and he said, well, I'll go. So he got started with the ship, and then a year or two later, every time I'd see him after that, he'd say, oh, you ought to come volunteer with the ship. And I said, well, I don't know. So a couple years later, I ran into him at the hospital. And of course, you know, that's not unusual for a couple paramedics dropping people off. But anyway, he says, the ship's in Texas, and he said they're short of people to bring it back. So I said, well, I don't even know if I've got the right license. And he said, well, can I give him your name? So I said, I guess. So anyway, about an hour later, I got a call from one of the other guys on the ship. And I told him the same thing. And he said, well, send me a copy and I'll go find out for you. So anyway, he called back and he said, can you come? So I've been here ever since.
So that's kind of a unique combination, a paramedic river pilot. How did that happen?
Well, I've been a paramedic and a paramedic probably 30 years and a fireman even before that. I just something I've always done around, you know, I got half the time off because on the river you work 30 days on, 30 days off. So I've always something I've always done.
Well, tell us about your river career on the river.
Well, I started in 73, started with a towboat company as a deckhand and worked my way up and became a pilot about 4 years later and captain right after that, and then piloted for about 36 years. Then I retired, and I guess this is my full-time piloting career now.
So what's the difference between piloting a World War II ship and a towboat?
Well, one big difference is this is a lot easier to drive because of the towboats I always worked on, most of them had five lengths of barges, 15 barges in front, and that's almost a quarter mile long, and this is much shorter than that, so it steers a lot easier. It's about the same draft, just easier to steer. Of course, we don't have flanking rudders on here, or it does make it harder when you try to back up, but it's pretty much the same.
Now, you have an interesting crew. You have a lot of senior citizens and veterans and volunteers, and how do they all work together?
Everybody gets along fine here. They really do. It's better than some other volunteer organizations I've been at. And that's really surprising considering, like, this trip we've been out over 30 days already this time, and, you know, people get on each other's nerves a lot of time after 3 or 4 weeks, but everybody here seems to get along. I think it's because they realize that this is kind of an important thing to pass this history on to the next generation.
How important is that to you?
Well, I guess that's probably one of the biggest reasons I do it, that mean, I've got a skill that I can help do that here by being the pilot. And there's a lot of young kids I talk to, even up at our school, local school and stuff, and they just, you know, they don't have any idea. Even I give tours with, like, when we were on all the three cities here, and there's a lot of these kids that I always start with, what do you know about LSTs? And I get a bunch of dumb looks and a few nothings and stuff. So, you know, this is a kind of an important part of history because, you know, I think Eisenhower was the one that said, you know, this is the ship that won the war. It's not a sexy ship like a battleship or a carrier. I'm sure that every Navy officer probably dreams of being captain on a carrier or a battleship or something, but, you know, these were just as important.
I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street, and I'm talking again to Chris Donahue, one of the crew members here and our host aboard LST 325. We've seen some of the quarters here, and we've seen the tank deck, and there's a lot of interesting little nooks and crannies aboard this ship.
Yeah, there are, and it's a lot of guys back during the war would try to find those crannies to get away from certain things. So there's a lot of nooks and crannies. You are correct.
Now the galley itself is very small, and that's a busy place.
Yes, it is, and it's been modernized a bit because we still use it. I think today you saw, three cooks in there. And then there's a baker, Pete. He gets up at 2:30 in the morning. I walked through there and seen him. We got our own baker. And these are all volunteers from all over the eastern U.S. I don't even know what states. But there. And you won't see many skinny people around here. So, yeah, we eat very well.
Now, the tank deck, that's kind of the impressive belly of this ship. And during wartime, it was packed.
Right, and that's basically what this ship was built for. The Allies, the British, man, they were in the war 2 years before we were. They were in a bad way. They were in survival mode, and we finally got in it. They tried a couple invasions at the port of Dieppe. One was at Dieppe, France, and there was another place where they tried to go in probing, see if they could land there. And basically, they had terrible success. They were pretty much taken prisoner or killed within 6 to 8 hours. They didn't have much armor. So Churchill and Eisenhower saying, in the back of their mind, they had this big thing coming up called Normandy, Operation Overlord, and where they were going to take 160,000 troops from one side of the channel to the other. But how do you get a lot of armor on the beach? So that's where the LST came from. The British had the basic concept of a ship. They gave those drawings to our Naval Department. John Niedermeyer added to it. He's a submarine designer of the ballast system. So primarily it's British, what we're on, but the Americans built them all. They enhanced it, made it bigger, and improved it. And Churchill later said, well, that's the ship that won the war. He was really proud of it. And he did, if he had to pick one thing, it would be the LST that won that war. But on the tank deck, this thing's carrying 20 tanks. Take that time, so you know, there's 229 LSTs in Normandy, by the way. 25 of those are from Evansville. Only one left sailing in the world. You're on it right now. Mm-hmm. But I'm not saying all those LSTs had tanks, because they didn't. This one had ducks in it, really. It was
amphibious vehicles.
Yeah, amphibious vehicles. But so you had, all of a sudden you had a few hundred tanks, and I'll call it. And without that, we probably wouldn't have made it on the beach that day. It was marginal at Omaha Beach. Everybody knows that, end of the day. Big sacrifice of life. And actually, at that beach, most of the amphibious tanks did not make it. So those guys were up there all by themselves.
And, of course, after the LST made the initial landings, they went back to England and loaded up again.
This particular ship, you went back. This was a conveyor belt of stuff from Evansville, Indiana, over to England into France and Louisville and every other city in the country. But, this particular ship, you know, made 22 round trips in the Normandy from England, starting on June 5th in the original Armada. Over the next 10 months, I'll say these ships are going back and forth. While we were bombing the German factories day and night, everything from food to munitions to oil, you name it, ball bearings, they couldn't touch our factories because our factories are over here in Evansville, Indiana, blah, blah, blah. And so this stuff's going over in big ships to England, downloaded on the LSTs. Because in the beginning, and this is why Churchill said it, because you could not take a big ship because of the into France yet, because the Germans controlled the ports. This ship does not need port facilities, so he can go up to any beach, like that sandy beach right over there, mm-hmm. unload 20 tanks, 30 trucks, and 200 troops, and winch itself off. Regardless of how good and big that German army was, they couldn't guard the whole coast. So they just had to guess what we're coming, and they got part of it wrong. You know, they were up at the Point of Calais. Because we were lying to them, we were going to come in there, feeding them false information.
And of course, the tank deck would also be able to house wounded soldiers, even prisoners.
That's what it was on the way back from battle. You became the hospital ship, pretty morbid place to be. Kids, a lot of people ask, anybody die on here? It's, well, not crew, but plenty of guys did who were wounded on the beach. They were being transported. Back to England, so I couldn't even tell you how many, but on the first trip there was 2 to 3 of them that died mm-hmm. there.
Well, I'm talking to Chris Donahue aboard LST-325. We're cruising a pretty good clip downriver toward our home port of Evansville, Indiana. Now, coming up, we're going to talk about the future of LST-325. Of course, the exciting new visitor center. Its status as a floating museum. I know you keep adding things as you acquire them. And its importance as a tourist attraction. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street aboard LST-325. 2 Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport.
Support for 2 Main Street with David James comes from listeners like you and from Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management, guiding clients through all stages of their financial lives to help them achieve long-term peace of mind. Details at BergerWealthServices.com.
Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and if you're just joining us, I'm aboard LST-325 on its river cruise back to the home port of Evansville after visiting several cities, including the most recent stop, Aurora, Indiana, which celebrated its 200th anniversary. On the map, Aurora, Indiana is just south of Lawrenceburg. Aurora is a river town of about 3,000. The ship has been here before, so folks were glad to bring it back for the bicentennial. Charlotte Hastings chairs the big event.
Well, we had the LST ship here 8 years ago, and it was the most wonderful thing we ever done in Aurora. It was just really exciting. And my son is the mayor of Aurora, and his comment was before he retired from being mayor, he'd like to have the LST ship here in Aurora again, as I did as well. So we started about 2 years ago, and begging them to come back, and they usually don't go to the second place, the same place twice, because they have so many requests to be invited to their towns. And finally, after so much determination and letters and calls, they finally gave in and decided to come back to Aurora. Plus, they heard they had wonderful comments about how they were treated before, so we were happy to have them come back.
Tell us about Aurora, Indiana, this historic community celebrating its 200th birthday.
Yes, it is celebrating its 200th birthday, and I'm sorry to say I can go back quite a few of those years. Don't remember the 37 flood, but my parents were in the 37 flood, and they've got pictures of that. I've lived in Aurora all my life, grew up volunteering, just enjoying the small community, very small, gracious, comfortable, friendly, happy, one big happy family. And we volunteered on the Life Squad for years, and it was just a volunteering effect. And I love Aurora so much. I don't know, over the years I kept doing different events, and we need to do this. And volunteers are absolutely coming out of the woodwork for this event. This is a great event.
Tell us about the feedback from the folks that have been on board. What have you heard?
Well, I really haven't had a chance to talk to them too much this time. Last time we visited with a lot of the elderlies, And they tell us, you know, somebody will point up to the gunner and say, I don't know how many people I shot up there. And somebody else points to, one of the nurses says, I don't know how many died in my arms on this ship. Such an emotional, sad. This day and age, we have no idea what those people went through. And this is, the history of this is to continue to get the younger children to realize what their grandparents went through. We also have done tours of the schools. We've had a committee that's worked with that to help educate the children of what the LST 325 is. And I think that's the purpose of the LST touring the country, is to get that and keep that word out as to what their grandparents and great-grandparents and has gone through.
Chris Donahue is my host aboard, and well, back at Homeport, Chris, we'll be there soon. There's a new visitor center, and tell us what folks are going to see when they arrive at that site next to the Tropicana Casino.
Yes, we're very excited about that. I mean, this has been in the works for 7 years. This past July is when we started this with the mayor. And then, of course, land-based gambling came around, which allowed us their boat to leave and ours to pull in. And then Tropicana just threw in $1 million, which really got the ball rolling. Can't say enough about Tropicana. Then the mayor and the city, too. And we put in some of our own money, what we could. And we got to pinch ourselves now. I've seen pictures of the building. I haven't been in town for a couple of weeks, but I'm told they're still in there. There's some framing up. And it looks like it's on schedule or before schedule. Our offices will be there. Right now, we're working out what is basically a double-wide trailer. It's not a trailer, but the size of it, if you've been down there. And the gift shop, too. So we'll have a real office section there, because we've grown, and we've got four employees. The rest of us are volunteers. And then the museum in there, which should be pretty darn nice. Andrew's in charge of that. We probably won't pull down there till the spring, April work week, when all our crew's here. And in the wintertime, I think our office staff will be getting that up and running, getting that museum looking cool. So you can look at all this stuff, other artifacts in the war, and then you'll also be looking out the back window at the only operational LST left in the world. And then as people are not familiar, come to the museum, we point up way over there, half mile down the road is where these things were built. You know, so that's a cool thing there that we can't do right now. As you know, there's pedestrian traffic every day of the week, virtually every hour, especially in the
Evansville
nice,
Riverfront, yeah. Busy place.
That's something we have nothing of right now. And so that's what's going to change big time. You'll probably see us open every day for that first year, so we can get our fill of what the market is. And Tropicana has already called us. They're working on the reunion business, which we're excited about, too. That's something we had a ship, but yeah, we're out in the field there, and no restaurants, no nothing. That changes, you know, here in the spring, and with the expertise of, as far as I see it, with the expertise of Tropicana's marketing people, that's hopefully what we can, you know, use to help us too. That's what we don't have. We don't have a marketing staff. We have somewhat, and we don't have a big budget to market with. So I think it'll be a win-win for Tropicana and us.
Well, right now it's more of a regional attraction, but you want to make it more of a national attraction.
Right, yes, and that's it. We started that attempt on June 6th. We did the D-Day down there at Tropicana. We pulled our ship down there for 4 days, and we invited all 12 allied countries that were there. Five of them showed up. After they had to Google us, probably, why would we go to Evansville, Indiana? And they Googled us, I'm sure, and they say, holy cow, it is. Of the 6,500 vessels, this may be the only one still in original condition. So they did show up. And that's what we're after. You know, then they go home and tells 10 or 20 or 200 friends. And pretty soon it doesn't take anything to get to the other side of the world with, you know, messages today.
Now, I've talked to a lot of the crew members here, and every time I talk to somebody, I learn a new story. I don't know if these are true or not, some of the stories they tell me.
Well, there's I can't say this on radio or TV explicitly, but you always hear these jokes, old sailors, you know the difference between a fairy tale and a sea story. You know, the fairy tale starts out once upon a time. And the sea story starts out, never mind, we're on TV here at radio. But that's a differentiator.
Now, what's Chris Donahue,
what brought you into this world of nostalgia and warships?
Well, it'll be 14 years this October. I went down. I got to see. They're saying a Navy ship's pulling up here. I believe that when I see it. You know, went down there. I'm one of those trust but verify kind of guys. And I went down there, and sure enough, it's an LSD. Now, my dad was on one in World War II for about 2 or 3 days between North Africa and Sicily, so not a long time, but I knew he was on that. And love of history, and the more you learn about what this city has done during the war, the more you swell with pride, really. I do. And this is a big representative of what this city did. And so I started out as a tour guide. And it kind of morphed into, hey, why don't you join the board of directors? Well, I don't know about that. And give it a try. Now I'm on my third term here. And my main project was to get this ship to stay in Evansville from my own selfish point of view, mm-hmm. and which meant really getting the Tropicana site. So that's what basically I started with the mayor 7 years ago. And watch what you wish for, you know, you might get it. So here we are.
So what do you see for this ship in the next, say, 10 years or so?
And that's, we signed a 10-year contract we got. Just, it's almost hard to venture a good guess right now. But we're going to get in there. We're going to have to do a new business plan. Right now, we're closed. Where we're at now, we're closed 30% of the year. December 1st comes around, we're only open on Saturdays because there's nobody out there. Literally, and that
at
stops.
At its current site.
Yeah. So that stops, and we've got we're always looking for volunteer tour guides, and we haven't got as many as we needed, so we have to hire some. Usually they're like students at, you know, in the college's age, and so we use, you know, some paid staff and volunteers like the guys here on the ship today, here today. And it's hard to foresee, but our idea is to grow this slowly as you're going, and John Talent, who has business expertise more than myself, he's kind of ramrodding that. My job was to get the building basically going, get it to where we can say, yeah, this is viable, and now largely him and me will eventually be looking at a general manager to cut him some slack so he can have a real life in Florida.
So will the ship continue its cruising?
Yes. We're pretty solid all about that. As long as these engines can run and we don't run out of volunteers, that's why we really bend over backwards to take care of our crew, because without them, we don't go anywhere. And at that point, your static display, you know, which would be cool down there, but you're not the coolest guy in the country anymore. Mm. You're one of a few, and we like being the coolest.
Yeah. So telling the story of the LST 325, I know you don't grow tired of that doing that.
No, I don't.
And anybody asks, you're ready with a story or two.
There's so many. But
what is your favorite spot on this ship?
Well, I don't want to say that while John Talent's listening, because that's high of Noah. The radio room, perhaps. I'm in the radio business. Motorola, we sell two-way radio stuff. And I've had a shortwave receiver since I was probably 12. Paper out money, go down to Sears, buy a $50 shortwave receiver. And so the radio room's chock full of fully operational World War II vintage shortwave radios. Two ham radio guys that really keep this stuff up. I mean, it's great. Everything, people are in awe. The elevator works, the bow doors, the Higgins boats. They were in the movie Flags of Our Fathers, by the way. And the radios up there can send and transmit. So we got a lot of experts on here with high levels of expertise from going through the docks. You've seen that twice now without scratching the heck out of your ship. And the radios, too. So the radio room, plus it's air conditioned. That's another reason I like it. Mm-hmm. And
what's your least favorite place on board?
Least favorite place?
Would it be a hot spot?
You know, out here on the mid deck at about 3 p.m. is a pretty hot place to be.
Yeah, and in September.
But I'm deck crew. The engine room, those guys down there deserve some kudos. You know, you may be down there yet. Two locomotive engines running. Nowadays, we have a little air conditioning pipe down there to try to get that temperature down to 100. And but back in World War II, It's miserable. Two locomotive engines cranking away for 30 hours. I couldn't do that. And you're wearing ear protection, and then you're communicating by hand signs. Actually, we got two-way radios now. But I'd have to say that would be the worst place.
Well, Chris Donahue, thanks for being our host aboard LST-325.
Well, thank you for coming.
And I also enjoy kind of roaming the decks at night and, like you, just thinking back into those days when these young men were on board wondering what's ahead for them around the next bend or the next beach.
And as you just experienced right before we started this, you heard them playing the Navy hymn. Mm-hmm. And they go up the river, they see a group over there. Well, we got a high-dollar speaker system where we play songs as we go by, and we get a lot of hoorahs and waves. And a while ago, hour ago, we went by, there was some Army guys training on barges out here. Mm-hmm. So we put on the Army hymn, caissons go rolling along.
Right.
They're up there dancing on their barges. So we do a lot of crazy stuff out here, but that's keep us sane, you know.
Well, I know you get a lot of waves from people along the bank, and like I said, we're en route to Evansville, the home port for LST-325. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport.